Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
Yes, this time of the week where we put your medical questions to our GP. Today it's the turn of Dr. Niall Breen from the Portmarnock GP Clinic. Niall, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad at all. Loads of questions coming in for you today. Actually, sorry, I should say the number is 087 1400 106. I saw my doctor for strep throat 2 weeks ago. I was prescribed amoxicillin for a week. All grand, went away. Now it's back again. I'm seeing the GP again today. So what should I ask? Do I need some form of a swab, says this listener?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I suppose you wouldn't always need a swab. OK, I think if your GP is a bit unsure of the diagnosis, then a swab can be helpful. If you've just finished a course of antibiotics, sometimes we do see people present, you know, soon enough afterwards, they can get reinfected, especially if it's somebody with young children in the house, kind of that kind of thing. But a swab might be helpful if your GP is a bit unsure of the diagnosis, because, you know, sore throats aren't just caused by strep all of the time. So swab might be helpful, but I would generally try a second course of antibiotics, I think, before I would be too quick
really?
To go for a swab.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
So back on, really just be prepared to go back on to a second course of amoxicillin or something? Or
something like that, yeah. It just depends on the person's allergies and things like that. But yeah, potentially, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm post-menopause, have high cholesterol. I'm lean, exercise and eat very well. I've had a CCTA scan, vascular ultrasound preventatively. Both have come back perfect zero scores. Medications are not required at the moment based on these findings. Is it something that I should have done every year or every few years?
That's a really interesting question. So that texter's doing an awful lot right, really, I would have said.
Yeah.
They're getting their checks. Their scores have been really, really good. I think probably what we often do in general practice for a case like this is we will bring this person back maybe every year or every 2 years, get a set of bloods, check their blood pressure, keep an eye on their weight, and we can put all of that then into a scoring system. And then that tells us whether this person needs to take a tablet to lower cholesterol or something like that. Cholesterol, when we look at it, we don't just look at the top number, we look at the breakdown of it. So somebody could have a cholesterol of 6 and 3 of that cholesterol is so-called good cholesterol. And so then we divide that 3 into 6 and we get 2. So that's not a bad ratio. Or somebody might have, say, cholesterol of 5 and one of that's good and the ratio is 5:1. So I think probably getting just an annual checkup with your doctor, getting your bloods done, something relatively straightforward.
Yeah.
As I said, I mean, they're lean, they exercise, they have a good diet, so...
It's all good.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
on paper. Good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Listeners 49, I recently had an endoscope and was told I have Barrett's esophagus. While I'm waiting for results to be returned to my GP, I have been quite worried and I'm just looking for advice today. How concerned should I be about developing cancer? What else should I be thinking about, says this listener?
Okay, well, Barrett's esophagus is a kind of a term that we use as doctors. And I suppose it basically means that we're just going to keep an eye on this person. So that person, whoever did the scope or the camera test or the gastroscopy for that person, may want to see them back at a certain time span. So what that person can do for themselves is, I suppose, just try and reduce heartburn and things, what we would call reflux, as much as they can. So if they're a smoker, stop smoking. If, you know, things like alcohol and spicy food and things like that can also increase your risk of getting kind of reflux and heartburn. So I think Barrett's esophagus is something more like, again, it's more of a clinical term. It can cause kind of discomfort and reflux and things like that. But for that texter, I think just I would go along with the guidance that will come from the person who did the gastroscopy.
Okay. 087 1400 106 is the number. Listener was on steroids twice and antibiotics just in February for a very bad cough. Has now come back and wondering should they go back onto steroids again?
Well, steroids are very useful. Okay. I suppose it depends on that texter's age, really. And also if they're a smoker or if there are any other kind of risk factors there. We generally only use them, I wouldn't quite say as a last resort, but if somebody's getting regular doses of steroids, that's a little thing for us to maybe have a look back on that person's history and say, well, do they need to get a chest x-ray? Do they need to get further workup? Do we need to send them for further testing? Or is it just really rotten luck?
And is it like, do steroids lose their effect?
That's a good question. I suppose the short answer is for short-term bursts like that, they shouldn't. So I'm assuming that if this person's having an infection, they might be taking them for 5 to 7 days at a time. So they shouldn't lose their effect. Mm. It's different if somebody's on long-term steroids. That's a little bit different, which I would assume this texter isn't. But if they're getting recurrent chest infections requiring steroids, they probably do need to get a bit more of a checkup.
A 17-year-old teenage daughter complaining about stomach cramps and bloating whenever she eats certain foods. So we're now cutting out trigger foods like breads and cakes. We're worried about being celiac and waiting on blood results there.
Okay, so if they have gone and had blood tests done, then they've been quite proactive already, so that's good. I suppose we in general practice, we get an awful lot of questions about food allergies and food intolerances and things like that. And in practice, they're actually not that common. Okay, so often there can be other reasons why somebody is bloating or feeling unwell that isn't necessarily a food allergy. So could potentially be something for that person's own doctor to have a look at a bit more closely. Depending on the results of their blood tests.
A listener says their partner had a heart attack 6 years ago. They had a number of stents put in, has no problems since, but has noticed his tongue goes blue. Is it a sign there's problems with his heart again?
Tongue going blue is a strange one. I wouldn't necessarily have thought that it was a problem with their heart. Is it something like a blue pigment on their tongue? Is it kind of a coating on the tongue? It's probably something that does need to potentially be examined. Wouldn't have been something that I would have put plastically as a trigger for a further cardiac issue.
Okay. Are heart palpitations serious? Listeners had them for 6 months.
Well, so I suppose a palpitation is somebody's perception of their heart rate. So if somebody's experiencing palpitations, to us as doctors, that's an awareness of your heartbeat. You're aware your heart is, say, beating faster or beating faster than it should. So for us, if that's going on 6 months, it would be a trigger to examine somebody a little bit more closely. So we would maybe consider doing something like an ECG, which is a tracing of the heart, just to kind of get a look there. Might do some basic bloods as well, checking thyroid and full blood count, make sure that they aren't anemic, and probably take a little bit more of a history as well. Are they breathless with this? Does it happen when they're nervous? Does it happen with certain triggers? So a little bit more history, I think, needed there.
Yeah. Okay. Texter has been on a course of calcium and vitamin D from their doctor for 2 months, and since taking the tablets, they've been experiencing a lot of headaches. Is it normal?
As a side effect of a calcium and vitamin D supplement, I wouldn't say that it's a normal side effect, number one. And I suppose we wouldn't really like to hear of anybody suffering with headaches. Headaches aren't normal. Now, sometimes we can investigate them quite thoroughly and we don't necessarily get a cause. But I wouldn't have kind of said that it's normal to have headaches. And it probably makes up 1 in 10 to kind of 1 in 12 of some part of all the consultations that we do. It's a very common presentation, and it can be a presentation of other things as well, illness or infection or stress or something like that. So I wouldn't necessarily link it to that medication, and I wouldn't necessarily describe it as normal either.
Yeah, okay. Any recommendations for stiffness in your legs? When I get up, I've been told by my doctor to just simply change my footwear.
So this person's obviously been to their doctor, and they've probably had a look. So if they've advised them to change their footwear, it could be that they have a bit of arthritis there, or they may not have a great arch or something along those lines. So by advising them to change their footwear, maybe they think that it's something that like isn't serious or doesn't really need much further investigation. I think that, again, this is probably somebody who has, like, I don't know how you would describe it, but maybe you would also check their pulses and other things like that. And somebody like this, when they're in with you, and I'm assuming their GP has done that. So it's probably something that if it's persistent and if it's bothersome, they might need to go back and get it looked at again.
Listener is 22 and wondering, how do you treat progesterone hypersensitivity? I've suddenly developed it seemingly out of nowhere.
Okay, so this is quite a rare condition, actually, and it usually happens in the latter part of the menstrual cycle, where somebody can get kind of breathing and skin issues, and it's thought to be associated with the progesterone that's in their system. That's an essential hormone. Generally speaking, it's treated by things like steroids and things like that, as far as I'm aware. But if I had a patient with that diagnosis, I would want a specialist involved there as well.
Yeah, but presumably if they're 22 and know this, they've obviously had some medical intervention, or they've been to a doctor or thought about it.
Yeah, I would have thought so. It's not a label that we see too often. So,
interesting one from a listener, Niall, who's wondering if you know if lupus can cause dizziness and lightheadedness.
So I'd say it potentially could. Now, lupus is an autoimmune condition. It's something that can cause a whole constellation of symptoms. So for somebody who's presenting with dizziness in the context of that, there could be an association, but dizziness, again, is a very common presentation to us. So you'd probably want to get into the bones of the history a little bit more there.
Okay. And just finally, for the moment, how can I get rid of a post-nasal drip? It feels like I have a lump in my throat and I just can't swallow. It's actually worse when I lie down at night.
So post-nasal drip, inhaled nasal steroids can be excellent for that. Your GP can prescribe those. It's a very irritating condition. You just get a constant drip of kind of mucus down the back of the throat, which causes coughing and keeps you up at night. If the person has a sensation of a lump in their throat as well, I probably would get that looked at and examined. Yeah, yeah, well, looked at anyway, certainly. Yeah. But nasal steroids can be great for that, as can sinus rinses and things like that.
Okay, good stuff. Listen, Niall, thanks a million for joining us here in studio today. That is Dr. Niall Breen from the Portmarnock GP Clinic.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.